Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 414, titled Islam Under the Swastika and Its Implications for Today. This is being recorded on June 16th of the year 2003. Remember Spitfire, spitfirelist.com is their website. It's equipped with real audio, and within a week or so of the airing of this broadcast, there will be a detailed article-length description of For the Record program 414, meticulously annotated in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Note that sister station WFMU-FM is archiving the For the Record programs on real audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available for download only on real audio at a longer URL linked to both the SpitfireList.com website and to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website. And again, a big tip of the hat to WFMU right across the river from Ground Zero. Thanks to them, the whole For the Record series, for all intents and purposes, is available for free online. Now, to the subject of this broadcast, what we're going to be doing is taking a look first at some of the history of the collaboration between Islam, or elements of it, Islam would be a better way of putting it. Part of this is the derivation of Islamofascism, not to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist, but there's a very important element both of fascism and of Islam that dovetail, and it is an Islamic manifestation of fascism. We're going to be taking a look at Haj Amin al-Husseini, one of the most important figures in the history of fascism and in the development of Islamofascism, and we're going to be taking a look at the concept, once again, of the Earth Island, as the German geopoliticians called it, the stretch of land from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, the Middle East, the former Soviet Union, the Balkans, China, India, and what is today Pakistan. It's one giant stretch of land with most of the world's landmass, most of the world's population, and most importantly, most of the world's oil. And across the middle of it is a vast stretch of largely Muslim population. In terms of their goals for world domination, the Third Reich looked to ally with these elements of Muslim population in order to conquer the world and also to, and in so doing, to cast the British and French out of the Middle East as the colonial occupiers that they were, and to annex much of the former Soviet Union, much of which was Muslim, and also to annihilate world Jewry. Today, Islamofascism is a very important element of what I call the Underground Reich, and what I hope to do in this broadcast is to detail some of the history of Islamofascism, in particular the Grand Mufti, and the Grand Mufti's recruitment of Muslim fighting formations on behalf of Nazi Germany, in particular Muslim SS units. And in looking at the Muslim SS and the Muslim Brotherhood, the dominant Islamofascist organization and the parent organization of all of the Islamic militant organizations in the world today, we're going to take a look at the ontogenesis, so to speak, of Islamofascism and militant Islam, and we're going to take a look at how this ties in with the world today. During the latter part of the broadcast, we're going to take a look at links between these elements of history and insurgencies taking place now in Chechnya, elsewhere in the former Soviet Central Asian states. We're going to take a look at the links with Hamas, and we're going to take a look at what is going on in the Balkans, where the Kosovo Liberation Army and the Bosnian Muslim fighting formations have a direct heritage running back to the SS. And last but certainly not least, we're going to take a look at the Islamofascist / Al-Taqwa link to the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization. We're going to take a look at Karl Rove's pivotal role in helping to establish the Grover Norquist link to the Al-Qaeda / Al-Taqwa milieu, and we're also going to take a look at the seminal role played by Talat Atman in the genesis of this GOP ethnic Al-Taqwa / Islamofascist link. Talat Atman, a director of Harkin Energy, close ally of both Georges Bush, Harkin Energy being the George Bush's one of the younger George Bush's failed oil companies, and Talat Otman, also with a heritage going back to BCCI, involved with people connected to the Nugan Hand Bank milieu. Talat Otman also interceded on behalf of the targets of the Operation Green Quest raids. Now, for much of the history of Islam under the swastika, we're going to take a look at a very scholarly and very important document. This is on a Yugoslavian website, and I want to note that. It does have its obvious ideological biases. Not inaccurate under the circumstances, but it does have its bias. I would note that there is a strong degree of correlation between this document titled Islam under the Swastika, the Grand Mufti and the Nazi Protectorate of Bosnia-Herzegovina, 1941 to 1945. It's by Carl K. Savich, S-A-V-I-C-H. There's a strong degree of overlap between this and Some Call It Peace by Yusef Badansky, a very conservative advisor to the United States Congress on counterterrorism. That book, which I've accessed in a number of programs in the past, most recently, For the Record 400, also has its ideological biases, but one of the things that's noteworthy about both books is that they are, from the standpoint of military history, very scholarly, and there's a high degree of correlation. And again, I believe that I've accurately handicapped both documents, and showing the overlap between this very scholarly Yugoslavian website document and the very conservative document that was authored by Yusef Badansky, Some Call It Peace, I think we can draw a pretty clear picture of a very important piece of history that is very much affecting the world today, and yet which has been largely eclipsed. The website on which this can be accessed is www.rastko.org.yu, R-A-S-T-K-O. Again, Islam under the Swastika, the Grand Mufti and the Nazi Protectorate of Bosnia-Herzegovina, 1941 to 1945, by Carl K. Savich, 2001. By way of introduction, we're going to, by the way, much of this document is going to be focusing on Haj Amin al-Husseini and his recruitment of Muslim Waffen-SS units. And Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS, noted an aspect of militant Islam, which he found to be very, very useful for the recruitment of Muslims to SS fighting formations. And this is something which is at the foundation of some of the events that we're seeing today. I would note, under traditional Islam, committing suicide, even in battle, is a deep sin. It's one of the reasons why Islamofascism and Wahhabism and many of the manifestations of militant Islam that we're seeing today are actually heretical. But reading from Heinrich Himmler's assessment of Muslims as practical recruits to the SS, unlike most SS officials, Himmler was convinced of the fighting ability of the Bosnian Muslims, partly from his understanding of the role of the Bosnian Muslims as soldiers in the Austro-Hungarian Imperial Army before and during World War I, and his belief that Islam was an ideal religion for a soldier. Himmler stated to Joseph Goebbels that he had, quote, nothing against Islam because it educates the men in this division for me and promises them heaven if they fight and are killed in action, a very practical and attractive religion for soldiers. And in Himmler's statement, we can see a very, very important ideological paradigm for the present. By the way, I would note that the Balkans, and much of what we're going to be looking at this paper is in the Balkans. The Balkans are an area that it's far more complex than it's made out to be in the American media, which is saying very little. Just about everything is more complex than it's made out to be in the American media. But in assessing the Balkanization of the Balkans, so to speak, one should understand that it's an area that has traded hands for various empires. It was, for much of history, part of the Ottoman Turkish Empire, and then as the Ottoman Empire began to recede and disintegrate, the Austro-Hungarian Empire moved in. The Serbs were among the most effective and militant resistant to both the Ottoman Turks and to the Austro-Hungarians. In fact, it was Serbian nationalism that helped to lights the match to the tinderbox that, of the Balkans that precipitated World War I. But one should note that in attempting to suppress the Serbs, the Austro-Hungarians actually utilized Bosnian Muslim fighting formations to suppress the Serbs and to fight alongside them in World War I. As noted in that passage that I just mentioned, this was one of the things that Himmler sought to use. Islam under the Swastika by Carl K. Savage begins, The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini. Haj Amin al-Husseini arrived in Europe in 1941 following the unsuccessful pro-Nazi coup which he organized in Iraq. By the way, one of the officers who was involved in that coup was Khairullah al-Tufa, Saddam Hussein's maternal uncle and political mentor, as we've looked at in numerous programs. Continuing. Husseini met with German Foreign Minister Joachim von Ribbentrop and was officially received by Adolf Hitler on November 28, 1941 in Berlin. Nazi Germany established for Der Großmufti von Jerusalem a bureau from which he organized the following. 1. Radio propaganda on behalf of Nazi Germany. 2. Espionage and fifth column activities in Muslim regions of Europe and the Middle East. 3. The formation of Muslim Waffen-SS and Wehrmacht units in Bosnia-Herzegovina, Kosovo-Metohija, Western Macedonia, North Africa, and Nazi-occupied areas of the Soviet Union, and 4. The formation of schools and training centers for Muslim imams and the mullahs who would accompany the Muslim SS and Wehrmacht units. As soon as he arrived in Europe, the Mufti established close contacts with Bosnian Muslim and Albanian Muslim leaders. He would spend the remainder of the war organizing and rallying Muslims in support of Nazi Germany. By the way, I would note that in World War II, Albania was among those Eastern European countries that fought on the side of the Axis. It was originally occupied by fascist Italy, and Albanian formations took part in the invasion of the Soviet Union. Skipping down in this article, of Haj Amin al-Husseini and his work on behalf of the Axis, and here there's discussion of the formation of the Muslim Brotherhood, the parent organization of Hamas, and an organization that we're going to look at in connection with al-Taqwa and the links to the Republican Party later on in the broadcast. Hassan el-Banna formed the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt in 1928. The Muslim Brotherhood had links to the Grand Mufti and worked with him in Palestine, sending volunteers in support of the Palestinian uprisings in 1936, 1939, and during the 1948 war. The Muslim Brotherhood sought to establish Muslim states based on the Sharia, Islamic law, and the caliphate system of political rule wherein each Islamic state would be ruled by a caliph. Islam is, quote, creed and state, book and sword, and a way of life, unquote. In Pakistan, Syed Abdul Alamududi formed the Jamaat Islami movement with the goal of establishing Muslim theocratic states based on Quranic law. Egyptian Syed Qutb of the Muslim Brotherhood continued the movement after World War II. The Muslim Brotherhood had offshoots, the Egyptian Islamic Jihad and Hamas. Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Muslim Brotherhood, Jamaat Islami, Islamic Jihad, all form the roots and historical background for the emergence of the Al-Qaeda network, the Mujahideen of Afghanistan, and Osama bin Laden. Ayatollah Khomeini and Bosnian Muslim leader Ali Izetbegovic would be influenced by the anti-secular, anti-Western, radical Muslim nationalist movements. In his book The Islamic Declaration, Islamska Deklaratia, or 1970, Izetbegovic rejected the secular conception of an Islamic state espoused by Kemal Ataturk. Izetbegovic sought to create an Islamic state based on the Sharia, a state where religion would not be separate from the state, i.e., an Islamic theocratic state. Izetbegovic established close links to Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda and invited Mujahideen forces to join the Bosnian Muslim army. Izetbegovic later would give Osama bin Laden a special Bosnian passport, and the Mujahideen freedom fighters would receive Bosnian citizenship and passports. One of the hijackers of the second attack on the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, possessed a Bosnian passport. Yasser Arafat was introduced to the Mufti, and the Mufti would subsequently become the role model and mentor for Yasser Arafat. In biographies of Arafat, whose real name is Muhammad al-Husseini, the Mufti is stated to be a distant relative of Arafat, although this claim has been denied as well. For 2 years, beginning at the age of 16, Arafat worked for the Mufti and his covert terrorist network and organization, helping to smuggle and buy weapons in the war against Jewish settlers of Palestine. Sheikh Hassan Abu Saud, the Mufti of Al-Shafaria, also worked with the Mufti. The Grand Mufti was a precursor of both the Palestine Liberation Organization, or PLO, and of the Palestinian National Struggle, and the movement to maintain a Palestinian state. The terrorism, fanaticism, and ruthlessness of that movement today reflect the enduring legacy and influence of the Grand Mufti. By the way, I would note that from a military standpoint, Yasser Arafat was also a protege of and associate of Otto Skorzeny, the head of the Odessa, the man who was in charge of Hitler's commando training, and the Skorzeny-Yasser Arafat connection was formed while Skorzeny was working on contract for the Galen Organization and the CIA in the early 1950s. Continuing and skipping down, in 1939, the Mufti established his headquarters in Baghdad, Iraq, where he set up a political department that maintained ties to Germany and Italy. Germany sought to create a Berlin-Baghdad axis and instigated a pro-Nazi coup. Iraqi General Rashid Ali al-Gailani, a militant Muslim nationalist, and the Golden Square, a group of pro-Nazi Iraqi officers, took over the Iraqi government. The Mufti sent representatives to Berlin and a letter to Adolf Hitler. In a reply by German State Secretary Freiherr von Weizsäcker, the Mufti was told that, quote, "The Führer received your letter dated January 20th. He took great interest in what you wrote him about the national struggle of the Arabs. Germany is ready to cooperate with you and to give you all possible military and financial help. Germany is prepared to deliver to you immediately military material," unquote. Abwehr, German intelligence, established contacts with the Mufti at this time. And again, note that one of the officers who assisted in the failed coup that we're about to hear about, again, was Saddam Hussein's maternal uncle and political mentor, Khairullah al-Tufa. Note that Youssef Nada also allegedly worked for the Abwehr, the head of al-Taqwa, or Nada management. And we'll review some of the links between the al-Taqwa milieu and the Republican Party and the Bush administration later in the broadcast. Continuing. Nazi Germany sent arms and aircraft to the Mufti's forces in Iraq, but the British were able to reoccupy Iraq, forcing the Mufti and al-Gailani to flee to Tehran. The Mufti then flew to either Afghanistan or Turkey, where he is known to have many friends, unquote. From there, he arrived in Albania, and on October 24th, he reached southern Italy. On October 27th, 1941, the Mufti arrived in Rome. The Mufti would subsequently play a major role in organizing Muslim support for Nazism in Europe. On May 9th, 1941, the Mufti broadcast a fatwa announcing a jihad, an Islamic holy war against Britain, and he urged every Muslim to join in the struggle against the, quote, greatest foe of Islam, unquote. Quote, "I invite all my Muslim brothers throughout the whole world to join in the holy war for Allah, to preserve Islam, your independence, and your lands from English aggression," unquote. The Mufti envisioned a vast Arab-Muslim union which would unite Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Palestine, Transjordan, and Egypt with Germany and Italy, creating a pan-Muslim Arab bloc of countries. Parenthetically, I would note that this dovetailed, this is the embodiment of the Third Reich's plan for allying with the Muslim peoples in order to gain control of the Earth Island and the world's petroleum resources. Skipping down. Franz Reichert, the director of the Palestine branch of the Deutsche Nachrichtenbüro, or German News Bureau, from 1933 to 1938, established the first contacts between Nazi Germany and Muslim leaders in the Middle East. The Mufti approached representatives of the Nazi regime and sought cooperation on July 21, 1937, when he visited the German consul in Jerusalem. He later sent an agent and personal representative to Berlin for discussions with Nazi leaders. SS Obergruppenführer Reinhard Heydrich was second in command to Heinrich Himmler in the SS hierarchy, and was the chief of the Reich Sicherheitshauptamt, or RSHA, and was the head of the Sicherheitsdienst, or SD, the SS Security Service. In September of 1937, Heydrich sent two SS officers, SS Hauptscharführer Adolf Eichmann and SS Oberscharführer Herbert Hagen, on a mission to Palestine, one of the main objectives being to establish contact with the Grand Mufti. During this period, Husseini received financial and military aid and supplies from Nazi Germany and Fascist Italy. I would note that Adolf Eichmann's superior and the man who succeeded him as the top SS espionage contact in the Middle East and with the Grand Mufti was Otto von Bolschwing, who was later brought to the United States by Alan Dulles and went to work for the CIA. It was Otto von Bolschwing's protege, Helena von Damm, who selected all of the lists from which Ronald Reagan made his cabinet appointments, and the vast majority of people who are serving the current administration of George Bush have a curriculum vitae going back to the original von Damm selectees. Continuing. After meeting Hitler and Ribbentrop in Berlin in 1941, the Mufti was approached by Gottlob Berger, head of the SS main office in charge of recruiting, and by Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler, who made him a part of the SS apparatus. In May of 1943, the Mufti was moved to the SS main office, where he participated in the recruiting of Muslims in the Balkans, the USSR, the Middle East, and North Africa. The Grand Mufti was instrumental in the organization and formation of many Muslim units and formations in the Waffen-SS and Wehrmacht. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims fought for Nazi Germany in the following formations and units. Two Bosnian Muslim Waffen-SS divisions, the 13th Waffen-SS or Hanjar and the 23rd Waffen-SS or Kama division, an Albanian Waffen-SS division in Kosovo, Methoja and Western Macedonia, that was the 21st Waffen-Gebirgsdivision der SS or Skanderbeg, composed, by the way, largely of ethnic Albanians from Kosovo. Continuing, a Muslim SS self-defense regiment in the Raška or Sanjak region of Serbia, the Arab Legion or Arabische Freiheitskorps, the Arab Brigade, the Ostmuslimanische SS regiment, the Osttürkischen Waffenverbander SS, made up of Turkestanis, note the following in particular, the Waffengruppe der SS Krim, formations consisting of Chechen Muslims from Chechnya, and a Tatar regiment der SS made up of Crimean Tatars, and other Muslim formations in the Waffen-SS and Wehrmacht, in Bosnia-Herzegovina, the Balkans, North Africa, Nazi-occupied areas of the Soviet Union in the Middle East. And note again the heritage of many of these units, continuing and skipping down. Savic talks about next is the collaboration between many of the Muslim SS recruits and fascist recruits from Bosnia with the brutal Croatian regime, which had, to a large extent, a Catholic ethnic derivation. By the way, the Neo-Ustashi and the Neo-Hanjar, the Neo-Ustashi in Croatia and the Neo-Hanjar, as to coin a term, in Bosnia, had much to do with the destabilization of the former Yugoslavia, and those elements are very much present in the new, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia, and in the new, quote, independent, unquote, Bosnia-Herzegovina, both of which are, in effect, satellite states of Germany. Continuing. In 1941, over 100,000 Bosnian Muslim conscripts were available to fight in the military formations of the Third Reich. Roman Catholic Croatian and Bosnian Muslim soldiers were in the Ustasha death squads, the Domobranci, or Home Guards, and the Croatian Army. Bosnian Muslim soldiers were in the Nazi Ustasha German-Croatian Legion units, the 369th, 373rd, and 392nd Infantry Divisions. The 369th German-Croatian Infantry Division, formed in 1942, was known as the Vraja Divizia, or Devil Division, commanded by Generalleutnant Fritz Neidholt. The 373rd German-Croatian Infantry Division was known as the Tiger Divizia, or Tiger Division. The 392nd German-Croatian Infantry Division was known as the Plave Divizia, or Blue Division. The 369th Reinforced Croat Infantry Regiment, made up of Croats and Bosnian Muslims, fought at Stalingrad, where it was destroyed. The NVH also sent the Italian Croat Legion, attached to the Italian 3rd Mobile Division, to the Russian front, where it too was destroyed during the Don Retreat. The 369th Reinforced Infantry Regiment, formed at Varaždin, consisted of 3 battalions, 2 from Croatia, 1 from Sarajevo. The regiment left Zagreb on July 15, 1941, for the Dorosheim training camp near Vienna, Austria. From here, the troops were transferred by railroad to the USSR. The regiment was deployed on various points on the Russian front: Kremenchug, Jazy, Kirovograd, Permomaisk, Poltava, the Dnieper River, Kharkov, and Stadino. On May 15, 1942, the regiment was deployed on the Voronezh front. On September 27th, the Bosnian Muslim Croat troops deployed to Stalingrad, where they fought to take the city. By February of 1943, the regiment was totally annihilated and obliterated by the Russian Red Army. The German Axis forces were encircled and surrendered en masse in Stalingrad. And we're going to continue with this history of Islam under the swastika, and in particular, SS formations from the Muslim population of the Earth Island, in the second half of this broadcast. And we're going to tie this in with the things as disparate as the Palestinian-Israeli confrontation, conflicts currently taking place in the former Soviet Union, the Balkans, and last but certainly not least, the Muslim Brotherhood links going to the Republican Party and the Bush administration. But that will be inside 2 of the broadcast. WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. WFMU.org/Dave Emery has more recent programs streaming. Older shows available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Within a week or so of the airing of this broadcast, there will be a detailed, article-length, annotated description of For the Record 414 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. That concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 414, Islam under the Swastika and its Implications for Today, being recorded on June 16th of the year 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.